KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment, the home edition. I'm Elvis Mitchell. My guests today are two people I'm proud to be talking to. I guess we can say they put the urban in urbane. I'm sorry, that slipped out. Anyway, they're the folks behind Union LA, Chris Gibbs and Beth Burkett. But I do want to say that one of the things I think makes this place so interesting, and I'm not going to use the word curated, but I think it's a place that's about a sensibility.
Yeah, I mean, and you could use the word curated. We do all the time, but yeah, I appreciate that word. That's one we actually use a lot. We really just are trying to share our sensibilities and how we've been able to navigate not only the fashion world, but culture, you know, Gen X, downtown New York scene, and then obviously for the second half of our lives, moving out to LA in a really pivotal time. I think, you know, when we moved out here in 2003, It wasn't what it is today. It was very different. So I think LA's become quite cosmopolitan, and we've enjoyed being able to kind of navigate that and share and learn too, you know. And I tell people who ask, not that you did, but we didn't bring it, but we came from the New York version of the store to the LA version of the store. And the way we've been able to grow it in the last 10 years, I don't believe we could have done the same things in New York. So there's definitely an LA sensibility too.
Do you agree with that, Beth?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with it. LA has changed so much since like we've even gotten here. And I'm from New York, but I went to high school here in California, not in Los Angeles though. Outside of Hollywood, Los Angeles seemed to lack culture, you know? And so I never really loved LA. Like I always gravitated towards New York and just like the whole, I mean, New York is such a special place, but I feel like since we've moved here, you know, in stores like Union and other streetwear stores have opened up, it's like created this whole world that didn't exist here. You know, there's more, the art world is here now. There's a fashion, it's not the same fashion as New York. It's definitely a more laid back, different kind of fashion. But still, it's a culture. And obviously, LA has always had culture, right? There's like, you know, Latinx culture, there's, you know, Korean American culture, like there's Black culture, of course, but it was always so segregated and always celebrated in this negative way. And so I feel like LA has changed a lot.
But one of the things that you guys do that I think makes the store, I think, kind of a focal point for, I'm not going to say fashion, I'm going to say style on the West Coast, that's really become this thing that has blossomed everywhere, is that it's about fusion, which is to me really like a Black thing, you know, about saying, well, we have this, why don't we bring this into it? And so the finding that you can intersect Tom Brown and Visvim. I mean, I'm wearing Visvim hoodie and a pair of sneakers, the low tops with the embroidery around the yoke from like maybe 15 years ago that I got from the store. And it's a place I come to where I expect that it's your sensibility there rather than a buyer doing it. And so much of that too is about, it's also about Black culture as much as anything else, which often feels excluded from stores.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, you know, you mentioned that. I never thought of it in that way, but like you think of Black culture in particular, and we'll take something that's out of context and make it our own. For us in the 90s, it would have been, we're going to take outdoor wear like the North Face, but now it's going to become this very urban hip hop thing. In a weird way, again, I never thought of it until now, but we kind of done that with high fashion. And that came through osmosis. It came through us kind of having this boutique and selling really high-end Japanese streetwear, which then butted right next to high fashion coming out of Europe. So we started experimenting and bringing in high fashion brands, but doing it in our way, right? How would we kind of reinterpret that?
I guess I think too, as we're talking about this, so often stores are kind of siloed. Like until you guys, you really didn't see fashion footwear next to sneakers in that way. I mean, they were like two different things. And you saw it because you guys are like right around over there by Stussy Undefeated. So they're like, this is this and that's that. And with Black culture, you go to, if you go to a church, you see so many different kinds of things in there. And in a weird way, I find myself thinking about occasions like that where you see a Black family with a father and a mother and grandparents and kids, and they're all wearing very different things. It's like what I was saying to you, Beth, about the movie Native Son. There's a scene early in the movie where Bigger is with his mom and his sister and her boyfriend, and you can sort of see the entire world of Black culture from Bigger's T-shirt to the boyfriend's attempt at being cool with like an athletic top and a polo shirt and the daughter's striped sweater and the mom's kente dress. But that's what the store feels to me.
It's funny you're realizing it. And as you can see, we're kind of, you're sharing with us, we didn't do that on purpose, but it's kind of organically coming through. Inevitably, like one of the things I've always said, people think of streetwear as this other kind of part of fashion. Like, you know, there's high fashion, there's men's contemporary, there's, you know, luxury, and then there's streetwear. And I'm like, I've never thought of it that way. Streetwear to me is, it comes from, we're just seeing what the youth are wearing, mm-hmm. and trying to give people kind of an arrow in their quiver to use through what we offer through fashion. So yeah, this is what we're seeing people wearing. We're not creating a new version, mm-hmm. a new kind of a silo of fashion. We're seeing what the young people are wearing. We're seeing what the streets are wearing, and we're making sure that we're trying to offer something up that can complement that.
I mean, I know I've always been inspired by street fashion. Part of just even traveling, I'm half Jamaican, and whenever I'd go to Jamaica, New York, I was always so inspired by what the people were wearing, you know? I've always been more inspired by that than even fashion. And fashion, obviously, that represents a whole other thing. So yeah, and even the merging of the two, which is like streetwear, which used to be such a bad name. Like everyone hated that name. They'd be like, oh, you know, it's like urban wear. And now, like, I was watching the Margiela documentary, and someone referenced how, oh, Margiela was like one of the first streetwear designers. And I was like, oh, you guys want to claim it now? Okay. Now you want to claim us. It was
like, but, you know, one of the things, again, and it goes back to the store being in New York, where you guys are really getting going, that period where hip-hop was finally being accepted as kind of a mainstream art, not really a mainstream art, but kind of a mainstream art. But hip-hop was starting to intersect with R&B, which is to say you were starting to get high fashion and streetwear together. And that's one of the things that, again, these points where there are these intersection points in Black culture, in a way I think is really nuanced, is something I'm used to. And that takes us from what you guys are doing to where we are now with Virgil Abloh.
Yeah, and it's funny, like you mentioned the music, which is, you know, a major influence, you know, hip hop in particular in our store and in streetwear, right?
Yeah.
You know, shameless plug, but we're working on a project with Bruce Talamon. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we noticed is all his photos from like the 70s and 80s, you look in the crowd and there's nothing but Black people. Yeah. And you think of, you know, this music, we would have thought, because we're not that old, so that music was pop and commercial, mm-hmm. but it wasn't necessarily. And hip hop, I believe, and you guys can argue with me on this, might be the first Black music that has become like pop culture.
That's interesting. I think we can basically chart all of Black culture in this way. When rock and roll was this thing that was played in Black clubs and scared white people, to when it was, you know, Pat Boone. And you go, and then again, you go from Houdini to the Beastie Boys. It's kind of the same thing. And I think at some point, Black culture becomes subsumed, it becomes mainstream culture, then suddenly Margiela is claiming it as being the first designer to include streetwear.
Exactly. And so all of a sudden, fashion becomes streetwear, as it has.
Well, I just want to correct myself and say, well, whereas rock and roll was started by Black culture, we kind of lost it in a way, where hip hop, we still own it.
Well, we don't, though.
Well, the artist.
We are painted as if we own it.
Welcome to the Gibbs household.
Well, all those years of therapy pay it off, I think. It's the treatment. I'm talking to the folks behind the incredible store, Union LA, Chris Gibbs and Beth Burkett. But I do think that what we're talking about, that's why I wanted to use the word nuance, because there's so much about what you guys do, that the ambience at the store, that's about come in and find your own way in rather than us trying to force it on you.
I mean, we've always thought of the store as like, unlike other places, we want you to dress yourself. We're not interested in dressing you. We've had a really long kind of ride, and that ride comes with also not trying to sell you into something that you're not. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to go into Union and be sold. Oh, that looks great. Yeah, of course. Nah, that doesn't look good on you. I don't, you know, we also like to have a personal relationship with the people that come in. Yo, that you've never rocked that before. That's not really your style. Like, if you want to change, cool, but it's not what I'm used to seeing from you, would often be something we say if it's not something that's fitting someone. So I think that comes with like one of the main kind of ideologies of the stores. We're again providing like a quiver of fashion, but we want you to dress yourself. We don't want to dictate how you're going to look.
I mean, and that's kind of how streetwear is. I know one of the reasons why I started working for James Jebbia when he owns Stussy was because I knew I could work there in retail and not have to be nice to the customers. And it was like, wow, I can make some money, be around some dope clothes, and not have to be like, hi, can I help you? How are you doing? Like, you could be like, don't touch the racks, or you can just like, and people loved it because it was like authentic. It was like real, you know, it was like going into the record store where like in High Fidelity, and they're just like, you know, like, oh, are you going to buy that record? You know, it was like that for fashion.
Yeah. It's important to note, James Jebbia and Marianne Fusco were the original originators of Union. We inevitably purchased the store about 12 years ago from them.
But there was always that strain that ran through it, though, that was about, again, we use watchwords like urban culture, but it was a place you go into and there wasn't a fear of urban culture. You know, it wasn't like behind a veneer of, well, you might like this and this and this. So finally, urban culture is over here. It was like, no, we're embracing it. And again, all those things we're talking about here, which is about the myriad ways that Black culture impact the mainstream and often don't get their due, is the kind of thing I've always come to expect from the store.
Well, I think part of that too is the fact that it represents so many other cultures, not just Black cultures. It's like the mixing of the cultures, which has made it very, like, people, it speaks to people that are not typically spoken to, right? So that's part of what's made it different from like urban fashion and even urban music. It's kind of like pop music. It's more accepting of everyone, because at least in the beginning of streetwear, everybody that was in it was so different and diverse. It was like, you know, which is what New York City is. But it was a melting pot of like Black, Asian,
skater, hip-hop, music.
Yeah, and it really just kind of, it was a lot like the punk scene, except more diverse, where, you know, people were attracted to it because of...
It's outliers, it's outsiders,
yeah,
right?
Just,
and we were fortunate enough, a lot of the influence on how we actually run the store, truth be told, comes from Japan. Where, you know, early on we were able to afford the opportunity to travel out there, and we saw these beautiful boutiques selling urban hoodies, and they were presenting it like it was in a museum. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, this is incredible, because I'm not used to our product being appreciated in this way. And we brought that sensibility back, there's the word again, and really tried to like offer our products in a way that you're used to walking into a store and it's hoodies and t-shirts and they're crammed on one rack.
Yeah.
And there's a little ringlet telling medium, small, extra large, large. And, you know, like, and I was like, nah, in Japan, they really appreciate this equally to high fashion. It's just a different take on fashion. And, you know, so we really learned from those early trips how to really appreciate and showcase what we're doing in equal light.
We're going to take a break. My guests who have just made the move from Bow and Arrow Quiver to United Arrows are Chris Gibbs and Beth Marquette. They're the people behind the great LA store. Union LA is the treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW Donation Car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. I'm negotiating with our guests, Chris Gibbs and Beth Burkett, the folks behind the incredible store Union LA. But Beth, I want to get back to this again with talking about Native Son, because I just thought all the things we're talking about here, about the way that Black culture can be its own thing, can be also really treated like art in another culture in the way that was that you guys are talking about in Japan, where you go to the stores and you see a pair of Jordans up on a pedestal as if they're an installation. But all the ways that, as a costume designer, what you brought to Rashid Johnson's Native Son was that thing where you get to see all these aspects of Black culture, because you came up, I think, with an aesthetic to match what I think what Rashid was trying to do, to make bigger sort of stand out, to feel like he was part of that place but also separate from it.
I really related to his character just being kind of like a weirdo Black person, and you know, wanting to just be your own self, but just kind of struggling to be able to do that because of, you know, where you live, your friends, your circumstance. I don't know. I really related to all the characters. Even Nick Robinson, his character was super like
hipster.
Yeah, like hipster, liberal, kind of hippie, super woke white male, you know, thinking he's down with the culture.
Sorry to interject, mm-hmm. but I feel like because we're seeing these people every day mm-hmm. at the store, you were able to really personalize that and be like, nah, that's how this person.
Yeah, I feel looks. Like I really knew these people. And that's why, like I said, Nick Robinson's character, I put him in a lot of Carhartt, and I wanted him to actually be more streetwear. And Rashid was like, okay, slow it down. but that is a representation to me of even what streetwear is, or even, you know, Bigger Thomas and his just kind of like, I wanted him to dress punk rock because his character and he himself, he is punk rock, you know?
Yeah.
And which is like rebelling against, you know, what you've grown up and been taught you should be. And I really enjoy doing that, especially with Black characters, because again, you rarely see our complexity and we tend to all be the same. We're like, you know, almost like we're a monolith. So just having the opportunity to even, you know, even down to, you know, Sanaa's character, I really wanted her like in the morning to have like a head wrap on. And I remember it was kind of a thing. Like she was like, you know, and I was like, I was like, it's not about looking pretty all the time, but it's about really getting into this character. And I really want to show how, you know, Black women wake up in the morning, because it's so inspiring, because you feel seen. And I remember the first time, I feel like the first time I even saw a Black woman wearing a scarf on her head was like in Atlanta, Donald Glover's Atlanta, like one of the, you know, the first episodes, she's waking up with a scarf on her head. And I cried. Because I was like, oh my God, I felt so seen. Like most people don't even know that that's how Black women sleep, you know, and all the things we go through to protect our hair and, you know, just maintain our beauty.
There's a narrative there. It's a narrative about inclusion, because Chris, you were just saying in the first half, you were talking about all these outlier cultures. And with the exception of the early days of punk, which was, as you know, incredibly white and probably incipiently racist. But if you look at skate culture or skate punk culture or hip hop culture, even though they seemed exclusionary, they were actually very welcoming to outsiders when they came in. And I think that kind of, once you get inside those cultures, you see there's a place for you, mm-hmm. especially if you're thirsty, it's kind of what the store is.
Yeah, again, we mirrored what was happening around us, or that's what we've tried to do and continue to try to do. It gets a little harder as, you know, I just turned 46, Scorpio's in the house. And so it gets a little harder, but much like our predecessors, our mentors, we've tried to empower the younger people in our store to have a say in what's going on.
I was just going to say they're very different. So I don't want to speak.
Don't get best started. They don't seem to be as hungry.
Yes.
As we really.
I think they take for granted that the culture's kind of been created for them. So there doesn't seem like there's like another culture being created. It's kind of like, oh, like everyone seems to be fine to go into their other boxes. They're like, oh, now there's more boxes I can go into.
Yeah.
Instead of picking a new one, they're just like, oh, let's.
Yeah. In a weird way, streetwear, and you know, there are brands and people and designers that are not falling into this trend. But in a weird way, streetwear was started as this kind of option outside of what was readily made available, let's say in urban, right? Like, oh, I'm not really, like, I'm not a monolith, as Beth said. I don't want to, you know, wear FUBU head to toe and baggy jeans. Like, I'm something else. I'm inspired by that, but that's not who I am. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, unfortunately, part of streetwear has become monolithic. Mm-hmm. It's a look as opposed to like a point of view.
Well, I think what you're talking about is this: why there's so this barrage of constant sneaker drops now. Because there was a point when that happened, it was kind of basically a signal that there was about to be a shift in the world. But now it's just with the point now to what you guys are saying, was sometimes streetwear feels like product rather than invention, doesn't it?
Yeah, for sure. You know, and that's like something that I think streetwear as a movement, for lack of a better term, is going to have to try and figure out. We actually had to have a little bit of an awakening in the last year or so to be like, hey, we kind of lost our way in making sure that we were representing young, up and coming independent designers. We got swooned by, you know, Paris Fashion Week and traveling to Japan. So we've actually really tried to make a concerted effort in the last 6 months or so to make sure that we are refocusing on up and coming independent designers, particularly people of color, and making sure that they have a say in our store. Even the Great Union, we kind of lost our way too, you know, in that commodification of streetwear. And hopefully, I'd like to hope we're going to find the balance. We're trying.
We're at kind of a crisis point where what fashion is has been dictated by circumstance more than any other time in our history. There was a time you used fashion to break out of your circumstances, as you guys have been saying. But now, so many of us are in our places and we don't go out. And there's certainly been a movement towards this in casual wear. I mean, you could actually probably have a different color, a different pair of cashmere sweatpants from a different designer for every day of the year. But that aside, it feels like we're kind of free-floating. And I wonder how you guys are responding to that, both in your home and in the world you have to be in through Union.
From a business point of view, it's become a little bit of feast or famine. And it's definitely, we see really strong designs and pieces doing well. We see really casual stuff doing really well. But a regular dungaree that doesn't have a particular point of view and isn't necessarily something you're going to wear to be comfortable around your home, things like that are suffering a little bit.
Yeah, I actually look at it from a positive point of view. I think what it's doing, it's just reshaping how we shop, what we're inspired by. I'm actually really excited that a lot of small businesses have actually been doing well, especially in retail, you know, having access to Instagram and having easier access to a consumer. And then also with just everything going on in fashion, like especially if you are, you know, working with people abroad, it's been really challenging. The bigger the company, the harder it is for them to get back up. But the small companies like ours, we've been able to like move faster because we don't have like all these people that work for us, and we can just make a decision, make a call, and then it happens. Whereas I find like fashion and businesses that are more on calendar, that are bigger, it's been harder for them to like make faster transitions. And I think things are going to just change faster, like even seasons. Like even now I'm working on collaborating with a couple brands, and some of the bigger brands, they're like showing me their spring collection. And I'm like, that's, you can't even predict that far out anymore. So even their, you know, they're like spring, summer, it just feels like, am I going to want to wear that
there's no way to know.
February, March, April, you know, and it's things like COVID, which are keeping us in our house more, obviously, they're shifting how we shop and why we shop. And I still think people are going to shop because they want to look good and they want to feel good. And
it makes me think of like the recession that we went through in 2008 or nine. It forced people to really pay more attention to what they were buying. And in actuality, like, it's funny, our pivot to kind of a more high fashion point of view actually came during that time in a weird way where, you know, we before that we were largely a jeans and tees and sneaker store. And those became kind of throwaway items around that time. And people were like, well, if I'm going to spend money on fashion, I want it to be something that lasts. I'm not just going to buy a t-shirt anymore. So at that moment, you know, really helped us grow into what we came to be, actually, which was during that recession where people were really taking a second thought about what they were going to purchase. Mm-hmm. And I think what's happening now, it's happening again. People are taking time to think about what they're going to purchase.
Yeah.
And I think it's forcing the brands to take time to think about who and what they are and what they're going to offer. You have to have a point of view if you're going to survive.
Have a story. Yeah.
You have to have a narrative.
But I mean, I think what we're talking about again is bringing a sensibility, because what people respond to is a point of view, or either to agree with it or to argue with it. But whatever the response is, they do want to react. And that's what keeps you guys going, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. It's something we learned really early on. Early on, we would do some pretty experimental And we'd be worried that it would take hold. And sometimes it would work, sometimes it wouldn't. But even when it didn't work, it got a reaction. And we saw that it got people involved. So it's something we've always tried to lean into, is like making sure that there's a point of view, there's a reason why we're doing a design, a shirt, a launch, a collaboration, and making sure that we're sharing that and telling a story. Yeah. And without that, we know it's not going to work.
Yeah, no, that's why I started a brand recently called Beffy's Beauty Supply. And I really wanted to tell this story of Black women and people of color that I've been inspired by. So that's why I wanted to start this line. And it's always been a thing about women in streetwear and why women didn't, we know that they exist. We know that they buy sneakers. We know that they buy clothes, but it's mainly men's sneakers and clothes. And it's been very difficult for women run streetwear brands to exist. Not that they don't, but it's been a lot harder. So I wanted to challenge myself and start my lifestyle, which is basically a take on a beauty supply store, and what are things that represent beauty to me. So I'm always changing up my hair, as a lot of other Black women and women of color do. And so I wanted to create this place that I could buy my clothing and some beauty, whether it's like nails. The kind of beauty that I'm into is different than a typical like beauty brand. When you put women of color into it, the whole narrative of beauty changes.
I'm sorry, this is the point where I have to say we're out of time, but you guys are certainly welcome back here, because there's so much we just barely scratched the surface here. My guests are the creative minds behind the terrific store Union in Los Angeles, Chris Gibbs and Beth Burkett, a recording engineer at KCRW. It's Mario Diaz. The show is mixed by Kat Yor. It's edited by Rebecca Mooney. I'm going to get rid of my foobs, everybody, to better days. It's The Treatment. To catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.